given by John Wood, who, when I asked him for his affiliation, he just said, just say ASA. So.
Yeah, about half this room knows me, and you know what you're in for. So are you hearing me in the back? Very good. That's great. Well, thanks for being here. This is a talk on finitude. Someone asked me at lunch about finitude. That's about limits or something. Yeah, a bit like Buzz Lightyear, if you saw Toy Story, you know, to infinity and beyond. Well, no, actually, there are limits. And we're going to talk about that, and a bit of a disclaimer, because we're going to talk about death. And we'll talk frankly about that. And those of you who know me know that for the last decade or more, I've been working on that, reading it. And it's challenging because it's personal for us. But then just the previous talk we heard, all of creation is personal to us. And so this is the same. So what do you see here? And I think if we have some younger people might, but what are those clouds? Anybody recognize those? Do you have anyone who works in meteorology or in something? Can you give us a name? What are they?
Cirrus.
No, you've got to go a bit higher than Cirrus.
Oh.
You're only in the
Alto Cirrus.
Oh, no, you're not even there yet. Some did I hear it?
Nimbus?
No. This is actually, that was taken, it's Alberta, so it's way high in the summer at night. Those clouds are 200,000 feet up, okay? They are at mesospheric level. They're out of any cloud that we would normally see. And if someone didn't figure that out and study it and tell you, you would just think, as we just said, right? They must be close to, well, that's what science is like. We had an example of it in the previous talk, where we discover something, it changes our way of seeing the world, and then we have to rethink things. Finitude is very much like that. You. I don't want to say I love this movie, but I like movies, and it was good. Hollywood has a way of touching on some of the most important cultural problems of the day, and this is one. It's the whole premise of the movie, if you saw it. This happens in a dance scene with her doll friends right in the very first few minutes of the movie. And she reaches out and asks the existential question that you and I know the Barbie cannot ask, and asks that question. And suddenly, well, I'm going to spoil it for you. Suddenly everything changes, right? And she becomes human instead of a doll. And that's the premise of that movie. But it speaks to something really deep in us and something about our culture and our moment. I had a lot of talk about worldview. And worldview is one way, but another way to think about these large combinations of ideas is think of overstory. Malcolm Gladwell has just published something. It's on the press. You'll see it in the airport bookstores when you walk through. Revenge of the Tipping Point. It's overstory. Revenge of the Tipping Point. An overstory, it's like in Christian circles, we talk about worldviews all the time. But worldview is a bit dated. But it's that notion that organizes everything so you don't have to think about things a lot. You don't have to think about finitude much or death much. And we have had an overview, and it has changed the way we think. In ecology, I'm an ecologist, spent my entire career there, and I've always dealt with Dell. I'm a population ecologist. We build life tables. How do we build a life table? We count dead things. And then we project the probability of life from when things die in populations. But interesting, we call them life tables. It was only, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years ago, it struck me, why do we call these life tables? Well, it's probability of life. Well, that says something about us, doesn't it? Well, then you go to the index of your first ecology book and you realize, oh, death is not there. You go to the next one, the next, and the next, and the next, and the next, and I found one ecology textbook from back in the 70s that actually talks about death. And it describes the 8 ways that you can die as an organism. Fascinating. Is something going on there? That's broader than ecologists. It's society-wide. But ecologists have started to pay attention, beginning in the 90s, this is the earliest one I've have been able to see, about the ecological importance, some of the earliest writing. And this is more recent, Death Rides the Forest, Perceptions of Fire, Land Use and Ecological Restoration in Western Forests. We don't talk about death, we talk about disturbances. Oh, there was a fire, it disturbed the forest. Oh yeah. Fire will disturb your house. It will disturb you. Wind, flood, Texas. We know this, and we've known it as people. It's throughout the scriptures, in a Mediterranean climate, you are going to deal with floods. Water is important. You have to pay attention. From death comes life. Large vertebrate carrion enhances seedling establishment. If you have big dead bodies, a moose dies, an elk dies, it enhances the berries fruit. A dead body becomes a keystone organism that organizes the whole system. Absolutely fascinating. Ecologists are paying, one of my colleagues from graduate schools at Notre Dame, he and his students are looking at dead bodies in water, in streams that flow, and how that changes the dynamic. Well, in 1993, a publication called The Ecology of Finitude, and I thought, fascinating. I actually just discovered that this weekend. It was in my files, and I pulled it out, and I said, oh, I need to go find that. And I've got find written on on the piece that I was looking at. I said, oh, yes, I need to find that. It's buried in the literature. But where ecologists speak of disturbance, the public celebrates with ridicule. We talk about death all the time. Talk about the Barbie movie, Halloween, they're up in the Northeast, almost anywhere, right? And we monetize it, we tame it. Terror movies are on the rise. Westerns, unfortunately, are not. And so we can handle death this way. But there are other ways to look at. There are other overstories than the ridicule. Mark Knoll has given us a very, as Christian scholars, has given us a very important book, Jesus Christ and the Life of the Mind. For believers, that's our overstory. He is our overstory. That's how we deal with death. It's in his birth, death, and resurrection. Interesting. Jesus Christ, slain before the foundation of the world. God in Trinitarian oneness knew what was going to happen. We are finite creatures. We are limited. And that's not a bad thing. This was God's idea. And it's all over in the creation. If you've heard my talks before, you've likely seen this slide. There's a wonderful new story, a new lens that we need to have. The sciences have given us something. We've got this new lens. And as I'm really talking, Patrick, we've been talking about this to theologians because it's a theological problem more than a scientific one. The ecologists are busy doing this. They're studying death. And in the medical sciences, well, just recently we took a pig dead and brought it back to life. So we're extending death, and death is a process, and I could go on and on with that. There's just massive amounts of work going on thinking about life and life extension, and what it is, and defining it. And it's all present in that picture, in those pictures. Obviously, in the dead leaves, the dying process, the salmon that run, you saw in my abstract, I gave you some other examples out of history. You know. So we have lots and lots of examples that are right in front of our face, but our view, well, let me take, I have to do this one, because it's biospheric, and people are talking about climate. It goes from the smallest single cell, you see that little, that's a little single-celled alga. It's not a marine one, but it's like what would be in the sea. And then in the corner there, you see plankton bloom off of England, and we can image that from space. And in the 1930s and 40s, oceanographers discovered that they were out in the middle of a plankton bloom sampling. They got up the next day and came back. I'm making this up. They got up the next day and came back to sample. It was gone. Literally in a day or 2 days, a plankton bloom collapsed. Big puzzle. It really isn't until in the 50s and 60s that we begin to discover programmed cell death. Those of you who work in the molecular fields will understand that. I've talked with graduate students here who actually work with that mechanism. It's actually 26 or 28 different mechanisms. And it's essential for our flourishing in our life that cells die. That's how the entire biosphere works. And it's planetary. It affects our climate, the interchange of gases. Finitude is God's gift to us. Mortality is not an evil. Now, I'm speaking as a scientist, but I've been reading theologians and theological. That thread is through, but this has been debated, certainly from the time of the early church. And there are different thoughts on this. Well, I've written about this, obviously, back in 2016 in Perspectives. Our anthropomorphic focus in theology and in much of biology, we're human-centered, that is, has made it difficult to imagine transforming this binary that life is good, life is good. You got to keep life going. You must keep it to the extreme. As Lydia Dugdale has said, a medical doctor who has written several books on death and is talking in Christian circles about this, and on public television, as a matter of fact. She has a story in there, in the emergency room, bringing an 89-year-old man back to life three times. He was clinically dead, and the family refused to let him go. And they broke the bones in his chest. It was brutal. That's a ministry opportunity. It's a missed opportunity that we need to take up. Well, let's go look at this because I think it informs all of what one might call environmental theology or what I call creation care theology. That's the community I come from. We really get our start at the outset with Francis Schaeffer. Many of us in the room know him and know his work because we're older. And in 1970, he publishes his most least known book, Pollution and the Death of Man, The Christian View of Ecology. And it's quite interesting because it's all about biophilia. And I was going to read a little bit of that to you. This is Francis Schaeffer. This is what Francis Schaeffer believed. A central feature of the Christian view of nature. And so we were able to say to the buttercup, fellow creature, I won't walk on you. We are both creatures together. Now here is a rich statement of biophilia, of a relational creation, an interactive one. Right? This is not tree hugging, although it sounds like tree hugging. And in fact, if you read, you know his story, he was influenced by some hippies that over in La Brea that lived down the street from them. And he got to thinking about it and he wrote that. Well, that was an interesting biophilia, but I can tell you not stepping on creatures will not get you there in conservation biology. or in life. Mortality, death has to occur. So what did he say about life and death? Well, then he went with C. Everett Koop, and they had what? A human-focused abortion, euthanasia. Kathy said, be brave. I will tell you, because I went to the concerts. I went to the conferences. I actually talked with Schaefer. I asked him a question about evolution. And he sent me a letter back. And he says, well, evolution is not a good way to see the world, see the creation. And so he had that binary view of things. And here I am, graduate student, thinking, okay, how can I think about this? Well, I'd been in the ASA already, so I had some ideas. What we saw and what we got, essentially from the 70s on, is a view that death is wrong and has to be pushed back. Now, it was modulated, so I don't want to argue that whole question. But I think that we would all agree that where the Christian church has come to on human death, beginning and ending, has not worked out real well. How's that? We could have done better. And we're trying. But I think to do better, the theologians need to help us think through finitude and mortality. The traditional view, and I'll do this quickly for you, comes out of Augustine's lead. It gets picked up both by Calvin and Luther and comes forward to us. It is tended to see death as a result of the fall. It's a Genesis 3 Adam and Eve problem. Death is punishment for sin. The first reference in the Old Testament in Genesis 2, although not without problems, Davies says, nevertheless gives the basic orientation for the biblical understanding of death. Here, death is punishment for sin. That's what I grew up with, and that was my understanding until I began to bump up against the natural world. In 2000, John Jefferson Davis published an Ecological Blind Spots article in which he identified two doctrines, the doctrine of creation and the doctrine of atonement, that are critical for creation care theology. Extending that is, creation is fundamentally good, not fallen, not broken, not bad, but good. And the atonement gets extended not just to humans, but to all of creation. It's a cosmic atonement. I would add to that two more doctrines. Finitude, that is, the physical death is a gift. God has gifted us that way. And relationally, from the Trinitarian model, we are in relationship with the creatures. We just had them for lunch, in fact. They are us. We aren't embodied without them. Are we changing our minds, coming to terms with dying? Terence Fredheim, in 2005, and I want to show you what the theologians have been saying now. This is 2005. I'll do this quickly. Death is one of the effects of sin of Adam and Eve. Well, most scholars now conclude that the text makes no such claim. Interesting. Some of you will know John Walton from Wheaton. All of this indicates clearly that death did exist in the pre-fall world. It was there. This is not something that was sprung on us by Adam and Eve. Interesting. We were always mortal from the beginning. And then Douglas Moo and his son Jonathan have released an entire textbook on creation care theology. I recommend it to you. And it's dealing with, there's no ontological change with Adam and Eve. Well, our bison questions, I call these. Climate change is a bison question. In the 19th century, we took, 60 million bison? And 1,000 of them came to Canada. and a few hundred might have stayed back in the United States. 60 million down to 1,000, we did that intentionally, industrially, economically, by government policy. What are we doing by climate? It's a bison question. I don't think we're thinking about finitude. Finitude is a gift because the cosmos is created. It's a gift of our bodies. We're dependent on death and dying. We've been given families. We've been given time and place. So what does the New Testament say? These doctrines are there. There are new texts. Philippians, you know this one from Philippians. In our relationships, Jesus did what? He humbled himself and he became obedient to death in Philippians. In Colossians, the supremacy of Christ, yes. In what? Firstborn among all of the dead. And then it goes on to say, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, tapanta, all things, not just humans. Thank you.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes for questions, and as I have reminded for the previous two talks, questions generally contain words like who, what, when, where, why, and end with your voice going up at the end. Also, I will ask you to please speak loudly and clearly. We do have a microphone in the middle of the room that will hopefully pick up those questions. So, yeah.
Could you give your feedback or thoughts on Romans 6:23 in the context of the talk?
Yes, I will. And I will say, Patrick, you could answer that. That's a theologian's question. I've been at this for 10 years. And I'm just trying to understand and get my arms around what the theologians are saying. I'm an ecologist. And I really am going to say, I'm going to defer to them on that. I think the Old Testament is much clearer. But let me just say this. One of the things that puzzled me is that why Jesus didn't spend more time talking about the environment. There's daisies, there's sparrows, there's a wind and the waves, there's lots. He makes wine. But wait a minute. Isn't this a central problem? No. The environment is not, the creation is not the problem. What's the problem? What's Paul talking about in Romans 6? What's he talking about in Romans? He talks from beginning to end in Romans. What's the problem? Yeah. And so Jesus spends his time doing what? He comes to deal with the central issue. And what hits me is that he begins with temptation. Two of the three temptations involve death. Food in the desert, on the temple, throw yourself off, commit suicide. And he ends where? Peter, I'm going to Jerusalem. No, they'll kill you up there. And he says to Peter what? This I am doing. And he says to us, we need to do what? We need to die. So I think the theologians need to help us here, because kind of like the Princess Bride movie, when we say die, I don't think that word means what an ecologist thinks it means, right? So that's a long answer.
I would just say, I'm giving the talk on Monday, I'm using death and sin and wages of sin. So there's another perspective. I'm not saying you're wrong, but
yeah,
another window.
Yeah.
So I know. Is your talk? Go ahead. Thank you. People want to hear this.
The first talk on Monday.
Okay. All right. We had another question.
Have you considered Tolkien's work as you think about all of this?
Yeah, Tolkien's great. He's got one little place there where I think it's Bilbo wants to kill Gollum. And he says to him, don't be so quick to take life. You can't give it.
I understand.
And so, exactly. There's lots of. I just think we need to change our overstory. We need to change the way we're thinking about this. And I just tell you, the ecologists certainly see it differently. And that's going to mean all kinds of implications. And I will say, from what I've read, there are different streams of theology that have been thinking this through for a long time. But in the Latin West, we have taken this traditional view, and over the last 20 years, every theologian I'm reading has changed their mind on the origin of sin, I mean the origin of death, and they don't put it in the garden. Okay, Larry?
Yeah. My question was very much related, but I think when Genesis talks about death and Paul that he's talking, they're talking about more of a death in the relationship with God, separation from God. Even the prohibition, the day that you eat this fruit, you shall surely die. Well, if Adam and Eve did not know what death was, they wouldn't really understand what that commandment was saying. Satan kind of twisted things that have, you shall not surely die, you will become like God. Well, they didn't actually die that day, they lived another long time after that, however you want to interpret it. But they were separated, removed from God, so there's a whole.
So let me respond to that. He's saying a number of theologians are thinking about that, and also the Tower of Babel story. And they're saying, wait a minute, these are two tests of humanity, right? Asking us, and it's putting limits on us in some way. And we don't like limits. And we don't like limits because they fence us in. No, we are in rebellion, outright rebellion against God. We need to understand that. And so that's one of the things that's going on. And so they're looking at those again and saying, oh, does that inform us about climate change, about AI, about other kinds of technologies and how we deploy and what, what's risk? Because it's also tied up with fear, because what's going on with Eve and Adam is anxiety. Patrick.
I'm afraid we are close to needing to embrace the finitude of this session. but I know that he had asked you to respond to the previous question.
So. Sure, and I'm not going to claim I can know the answer. But I thought of something. I thought I'd throw it out and see what you think. And because there's this thing about, well, there are these passages that say, well, the wages of sin is death. And, Paul talks in Romans 5 about from the time of Adam, death reigned. It could actually be true that death can both be punishment and it can be a means to life.
Yeah.
And the key difference might be that sin changes the function of death.
Right.
So that sin might, maybe death's proper role is a means toward life.
Right.
But with sin, life becomes the mean towards death, and death now reigns also. So I'm wondering about the difference between death being a means to life and then the elevation of death as a kind of reigning sort of dark tyrant, right?
Yeah, thank you for that, Patrick. That's very helpful. And I've just close it back to creation care theology. What we were doing at the Sobel Institute is training up the next generation of stewards, caretakers, earth keepers. They need the tools and the mental view to be able to care for the earth. It's not really about us. It's that outward looking, because if we care for the earth and it flourishes, we flourish. And we need a rethinking of finitude in order to be able to, and relationality in order to be able to better care for the earth. Yeah, thanks.